This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by the wonderful patrons of Trek FM, who support us through Patreon. If you love Star Trek discussion, visit patreon.com/TrekFM to find out how you can help and even become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trek.fm. And we thank everyone for their support.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome everyone to Continuing Mission, our look at the way fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Tony Robinson, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series or independent productions that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. In this episode, I'm joined by Paul Olson, the very talented artist who has given all of us who love Star Trek a gift in the form of his outstanding contribution to the look, the feel, and the appeal of the Starship Enterprise NCC-1701. In 1979, Paul gave the Enterprise its pearlescent ball gown, as he puts it, and helped create one of moviedom's most iconic and enduring images. Our discussion today focuses on Paul's work on the Enterprise, how it was conceived, and what became of the original model itself. Paul is now extremely busy working with the team that originally came together to create the Enterprise for Star Trek The Motion Picture, as they set about to bring forth only the second studio-scale model in history to egress from the same space dock, as it were. So let's get into the turbolift and go and meet with Star Trek's most illustrious of visual effects artists, Paul Olson. So hi, Paul. Welcome to Continuing Mission. Where do we begin, I wonder? Because I guess we should start with a little about who you are yourself, where you come from, and how you became part of one of the most famous of all science fiction franchises, Star Trek.
Okay, well, starting at the beginning, I was born and raised in San Francisco.
At a very young age?
At a very young age, yes.
That's always helpful.
As you say, yes. And my father grew up in Haight-Ashbury, and I grew up right next to it and just fell into the whole 60s thing and formed a poster company called Funky Features, and we did very well. And I created a couple of very famous posters, one for Light My Fire and the other one for A Day in the Life. And then I moved to the UK and ran into Robin Trower, who I met in San Francisco, in fact, with Procol Harum. And Robin was producing his first album just around the corner from where I was living. And so I did start doing his album covers. And then I moved to LA and met two top English airbrush illustrators, Peter Lloyd and Ed Scarisbrick, who both knew each other. And because I lived in England, we had something in common, and they were teaching me how to use an airbrush, which I didn't know how to use, and all the tricky techniques that are employed in using an airbrush effectively. And then one day, while I was sitting in my studio I had a beautiful house up in the Silver Lake Hills in East Hollywood, looking out over all of LA, the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was Ed. And he just simply said, "Paul, it's Ed. How would you like to paint the Starship Enterprise?"
So you'd no advanced warning. It was like you're just going about your business, maybe going to pour yourself a drink, and the phone rings, and next thing you know, you're part of Trek history.
An absolute bombshell. I mean, there was no, well, you know, I could have said no. So Ed gave me Jim Dow's details, who was building the Enterprise at Magicam in Hollywood. And I called Jim, and he said, "Come on down." And I hopped on my motorcycle with my portfolio and zipped down to Magicam. And Jim looked at my stuff, and he knew a lot of what I had done. And he said, "I think you'll do fine." And he led me down the hallway, opened the door into the spray booth, and there she was.
You're mentioning Jim, but Jim who? I mean, who is Jim?
Jim Dow. Jim Dow built the Enterprise. He was in charge of building it. A lot of people worked on it. But Jim was in charge of Magicam, and Magicam was half-owned by Paramount, and they were in charge of building all the models for Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Right, so they were actively engaged in a Star Trek project at this point in time, and that was for the Phase 2 TV series that didn't quite come about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they built models for the Phase 2 because it was television, and back then, American television was 525 lines, real low resolution, and so you didn't have to make things look all that great to look really good on the screen. And the models they made would not hold up in the cinema. And when that story changed, or that situation changed because of Star Wars coming out in 1977, then Gene Roddenberry and the people at Paramount put their heads together and said, wait a minute, look how successful Star Wars is, and we have a franchise that people are already familiar with. Why don't we make a movie? And this was all new for them because they were television people. So they never thought in terms of a movie, but Star Wars changed everything. And so then they decided to scrap the whole concept, and they used the premise of the TV, because it was going to be a TV special, two-hour TV shows. And they took the basic story of V'ger and then changed it into a film script and then started gearing up to make a movie.
So you met Jim, and then eventually you came across another gentleman by the name of Richard Taylor. But were you aware of these people before you came on board with the project?
Well, there's a funny story there, because Peter Lloyd, one of the two English guys I mentioned, who really taught me how to use an airbrush, Peter had moved to New Mexico and would drive to L.A. for work, and we'd share my studio. And Peter was working with a guy named Richard Taylor, who I met, and he'd done a lot of stuff with Disney and everything, and then eventually worked with Richard on Tron, and Peter did all the environments for Tron, working with Sid Mead. So I met this guy, Richard Taylor. I was introduced to him, and that was it, basically. And then a guy named Richard dropped in, because Richard's work had been done by the time I came on board. You know, he had worked with Jim and with Gene Roddenberry months before. But he popped in, and I was just introduced to him as Richard. I didn't know that he had designed the Enterprise. I didn't know I kind of recognized him, but I didn't realize it was the same Richard Taylor that I briefly met with Peter Lloyd. I never put the two together, and that Richard had designed the Enterprise, and Jim had never mentioned it. And so I didn't know about all of this until I wrote the book.
So you see the Enterprise for the first time, and what goes through your head when you're looking at the surface of the model and thinking, will I paint it yellow, will I paint it blue, black, whatever? How did you decide what the surface was going to look like? How did you decide on the final finished look of the Enterprise as we know it today?
Well, to answer your question, I looked at the Enterprise with complete awe and then absolute fright, because it was now up to me to paint her, you know, and I had never airbrushed an actual object before, like a crash helmet or a car or anything. And Jim came in and he said, I've been thinking about how to paint the Enterprise, because basically it needs to be white, but it needs to have scale. So it needs to have a lot of detail on it. And so how do we do that? And Jim had restored a 1937 Ford and had painted it in pearlescent paints. And so he said, I've been thinking, and he said, why don't you paint it in these pearlescent paints made by a company called Crescent? And so I went out and bought the paints and started working with them. I spent 3 days doing tests and everything, and then I started working on the saucer.
But who, in the beginning, decided what the color should be? Was it based on the TV series, how the Enterprise appeared on TV? Or was it the thought processes of Richard Taylor and Jim combined? Or was it random? I mean, somebody came up with a color scheme, and then you had to follow that. You didn't have any particular say in that, did you?
No. I had a complete say in what I was doing because Gene Roddenberry had said to Richard, you know, it has to have the same basic shape as the TV model. And so Richard redesigned it, but with that basic same shape. And he elongated it and, you know, made it look a lot more linear. But the ship had to be white. But you can't get scale in a pure white shape. The model just wouldn't look huge on the screen. So it needed detail, but still needed to be white. And the only way you could do that in normal terms would be to give it various shades of light gray. But Jim said, I think the pearl paints will really work. And they did. Yeah. It made shooting it very difficult, but the model, when she was done and lit, looked like an opal. I mean, absolutely stunning. And unfortunately, you just don't see the beauty of it in the movie.
No, that's the shame of it. But the Star Trek fans are aware it looked magnificent until it was repainted or recovered for the later movies that came along.
Yeah.
They effectively destroyed, unfortunately, your artwork. Were you aware of Star Trek when it was first on TV? I mean, you knew the Enterprise existed, but were you aware of Star Trek, the TV series?
Well, I was aware of it, and I think I might have watched one episode, but it didn't grab me. But obviously, the shape of the Enterprise, as soon as you see it, you can't forget the look of it, you know. You can see it again 20 years later, and you know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So it's now become indelibly planted in people's minds all over the world.
So let's talk a little bit about Project Enterprise, because this is something you now have your heart set on. Essentially, what is Project Enterprise?
Well, Project Enterprise is the program to rebuild our original Enterprise, only making it 50% larger and 200% more beautiful, because Paramount sold off our damaged, resprayed, compromised Enterprise in 2006 that had been mishandled through the course of six movies. And the last four movies were pretty much all CGI, so it didn't matter whether the model was nicked or scratched or bits were missing. They could clear it up in computers. So they sold it off at a private auction at Christie's in New York, and Jeff Bezos bought it, and he's got it in his Blue Origin offices in Kent, Washington.
Yeah, I think I've seen some pictures online of the Enterprise sitting in what looks like some sort of laboratory?
It's a big atrium, but he also uses it as a centerpiece for dinner parties, and so it's his baby. And I approached him to see about restoring it, the three of us, but mainly Jim and myself and some model makers, to restore it, to bring it back to what she was when she left my hands to go out on a shooting stage for STMP. And but the caveat would be that then Jeff would have to give it to the public and keep it on public display, which he didn't want to do. And that's fair enough. You know, he bought it and he wants it for himself. Yeah. But it should never be seen by anyone because it's been completely ruined.
Not in its present state. I'm pretty sure. Well, so then what happened?
Well, I had this grandiose idea and all of a sudden I had nothing. So I pretty much thought, well, that's that. You know, I gave it a shot, but it's not going to happen. And then Boyd Crompton, who is a top modeler in San Antonio, Texas, he's very well known. He's got scads, probably over 100 YouTube how-to videos on model making, and he specializes in Star Trek, but he does everything, really. And Boyd contacted me and said, Paul, you guys are still around. Why don't you build another one? And I have to admit, I wasn't taken with the idea of doing it again. And I said, I don't think it's a... But Boyd kept after me. And after about a week, he made me think about it. And I started thinking about it. I thought, well, wait a minute. I think it would be great. And using modern technology, make it larger, and will surround her in a complete 3D state-of-the-art virtual reality display, and she'll look like she's flying through space and time. It'll be an absolute knockout. The fans will absolutely love it. So then you and I talked about moving forward, and we came up with the idea of 1701 Rebuild, and formed a website to start selling some premiums to gain a bit of cash to see if I could get over to LA and get a PR person to get us on the map. And then we moved on to calling it Project Enterprise. And that's when I had a friend of mine redesign the website, a lovely guy named Rob Goodyear, who did a brilliant job. So if you go to projectenterprise.space, you'll see just how good he is.
So just to recap, you hit the brick wall, the people at Amazon shut you down, and you thought it was all over, a great idea had passed, and it got saved by Boyd Compton.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
And Boyd, because when he made his first suggestion, I mean, he was all enthusiastic about it, but I wasn't on the first, when he ran it by me the first time. And he said, well, think about it. And then he contacted me the next day. And he said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, you know, and he kept going. And it took about a week. And finally, I saw the light. And I got all turned around. And you have to understand that I wasn't really a big Star Trek fan. But I was beginning to get immersed in everything Star Trek, you know, because of my book and all the people I met at the convention. And I began, as I said, I began to see the light, and what a great idea it is. And the fact that we could do it again, and we're still around and we're the only people who can do it. I mean, lots of people can build a model of the Enterprise, but that's all it'll ever be. If we do it, it's another work of art.
And how did you set about contacting the Enterprise designer, Richard Taylor, and the builder, Jim Dow? I mean, a lot of time had passed, and were they surprised to hear from you? How did you go about contacting them?
Whilst I was writing the book, Creating the Enterprise, as a result of my speaking at the incredible 2012 Destination Star Trek London that you arranged for me, I contacted Mark Stetson, who was head of the top modeler at Magicam. And Mark and I are very good friends. And Mark knows everyone in Hollywood that has anything to do with effects. And he's a top effects supervisor. He even has an Oscar and two BAFTAs, does Mark. Oh. And he's got a great memory. And so I wrote to Mark and asked him if he knew how to get hold of Jim and Richard, which he did. And he gave me their details. And so I got in touch with him. And then we arranged to meet at a very expensive watering hole of Richard's, which is a wonderful place, but I'll never go there again until I've made millions, if that ever happens, because it's horrendously expensive. But we all got together there, and they had met each other at various conventions over the years, not Star Trek conventions, but effects and Hollywood type stuff. So they had been in touch with each other from time to time and with Mark, but I hadn't seen either of them for 32 years. So it was a really interesting evening.
Did they make any comment about rebuilding the Enterprise specifically? They knew they were meeting you for that idea, but how did they feel about it?
We hadn't got that far at that point. This was before I found out what had happened to our model. We didn't know. And nobody knew out in the world at that time. I mean, this is 4 years ago. Was it 4 years ago, I think?
Approximately.
Yeah, I think about
4 years.
It all
started around 2012, yeah.
Yeah, so it was 2013 when I went when I flew over to L.A. And so this was all very early days. And, they both wondered where our model was. And I said, well, when I get back to England, I'll do some digging, which I did. And it took me 6 months to find out where it was. The so-called internet wisdom at the time of all the Star Trek people and everywhere was that Paul Allen owned it, and he had bought it at the auction. And I did everything to get hold of Paul Allen. I've got a couple of friends who know him, and I still couldn't get to him. And then a guy out of the blue from somewhere in mid-America wrote to me, and he said, surely Jeff Bezos has it. And so then I tracked that one down, and he did. But he was keeping it under wraps at that particular point. I mean, this is several years ago, before it got out that he owned it. You know, he just didn't want, you know, he wanted it for himself, and fair enough. So I approached his people about restoring it, and so they shut that one down. And then that stopped everything, and then Boyd came along and, you know, started the ball rolling again.
And out of these ashes, Project Enterprise was born.
Like the Phoenix.
Like the Phoenix to the flame. Incidentally, the Phoenix is the name of the ship that first went to warp drive, and maybe that's significant that we use that term. Anyway, and so you've been in contact with Richard Taylor and Jim Dow ever since. And
Yeah. But I mean, I've been doing this pretty much all myself with your help, so.
A little bit of help for me. So as Project Enterprise is gathering pace and momentum, it's drawing in Star Trek alumni from different parts of the universe. How did you meet with Nichelle Nichols?
Now this is interesting. Nichelle Nichols is really responsible for the creation of Project Enterprise, and I'll tell you why. You called me up in 2014, in September of 2014, and said, look, there's another destination, Star Trek London. Do you want to see if I can get you on it? I said, sure. And that was unsuccessful. And then you said, well, let's go down there anyway, and we'll hang around the hotel and we'll cruise around. And we did that, and we went back to the hotel we stayed at 2 years previously, where everybody stayed, you know, where they put everybody up. And we were sat at the bar, and Nichelle Nichols was sitting over near us. Mm. And so you went over to talk to her and then called me over, and we started talking. And Nichelle said, so what are you doing? And I said, I'm thinking about recreating the Enterprise with Jim and Richard, but it's such a daunting task. I don't know really where to begin, but I'm, you know, we're working on it. And she just turned to me, she grabbed my arm, looked me straight in the eye and said, Paul, I'll unveil it. And that did it, really. You know, that really kicked it off. I mean, that cut in the afterburners and the warp drive and the, you know, impulse engines and everything all at once.
Yeah.
And it changed everything. It, you know, now having the show on board, I could just see all kinds of possibilities. And so, and she invited me to come and see her in LA, and I did, and then videoed her, and she's on the website, and she's our spokesperson, and it's all, everything's changed, and it's all gone, you know, fabulous now.
Well, they're the two grand ladies of Star Trek, the Enterprise and Nichelle Nichols.
So absolutely.
It's great to have them both together.
Yeah.
But you've got some exciting plans for her when it comes to launch time.
Ah, yes. Well, as Nichelle put the suggestion in my brain box that she would unveil it, and I've always had a bit of the P.T. Barnum in me. I've done a lot of street events and gotten publicity all over the world, and I like creating things out of nothing. And I could just see a grand, flamboyant premiere on Hollywood Boulevard at Grauman's Chinese Theater, especially like was done in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, with searchlights and fireworks and traffic jams. And so what I want to do is have the Enterprise in the forecourt of Grauman's Chinese Theater. And if you're not familiar with that, that's the theater where all the handprints and the footprints are, in the forecourt. So there's kind of a U-shaped entrance off the pavement, off the sidewalk, on the Walk of Fame. And it's a famous theater, so you know, look it up and you'll see what I mean. And across the forecourt, I want to drape 20-foot high curtains to hide the Enterprise. And we'll have a big stage set up in front and have lasers and searchlights and the Goodyear blimp and have the Enterprise displayed on her electronic display on the blimp. So at nighttime, it'll look like the Enterprise floating, yeah. Above, and have music, and the whole nine yards. And then Nichelle will stand up and say something like, it gives me a great honor and privilege to be here, and thanks to all you fans and our sponsors, and et cetera. And she'll turn around and command the curtains to part, and there will be, and all the searchlights will zero in, and there will be the Starship Enterprise to wow everyone. And then she'll step down and swing a bottle of champagne against the dais to launch the Starship Enterprise. And, of course, all ships are launched by women, and there's only one woman on the face of the Earth who can launch the Starship Enterprise, and that's Nichelle.
That's Lieutenant Commander Uhura.
Absolutely. And it'll be just, I can see it. I can see the whole, it'll be the greatest premiere Hollywood's ever seen. And we'll build up to it, whilst we're building the Enterprise, and we'll have stars dropping in to see us and directors, and we'll be getting a lot of publicity, and we'll prime the world for this event. And everyone, there can't be many people who have a TV who don't know what the Starship Enterprise looks like. Who don't know something about the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, the shape is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So
when all the hoo-ha on launch night dies down and you get down to business, the Enterprise is going on tour, or it's going to be displayed at conventions. What exactly is going to be involved in that?
Well, the whole point in doing this is to bring this loved, iconic symbol of this most incredible franchise that has affected people all over the world back to the public, and to keep her in the public eye. And so I want the Enterprise to tour the world, to go to conventions, to be available to as many fans all over the world as we can get to. And but to begin with, I'm thinking probably the best venue would be a top Las Vegas casino for maybe 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And, to really showcase it. And, we'll be taking bookings, and then we'll just start taking her around the world. And it'll be a big procedure. We'll need several people. This is like taking a rock and roll band, because it has to be set up, and all the projection equipment and sound equipment and the video equipment and,
So this really is for the fans, and fans can come and see the Enterprise,
yes,
wherever it is, anytime they
that's near them. Absolutely, yeah.
Wish to.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I'll give talks, and there are lots of little extras that I won't talk about now, but it'll be a hell of a show, and it'll be free.
And what about if somebody comes along and says, "Hey, we're making a new Star Trek production, a movie, and we need a starship to feature in the movie." Will the Enterprise be available for those kind of people?
Yes. Well, I think what will happen, Tony, is that whilst we're building it and the word is out, and we'll be getting lots of little TV feature pieces out there as the build progresses, the Enterprise will become the elephant in the Paramount room, really. And, somebody will put 2 and 2 together and come up with 7. And to that end, I wrote a screenplay that you helped me with that features our Enterprise, and that takes off from the fourth movie, The Voyage Home, which is my favorite Star Trek film, to that end, so that when that happens, I can go, here, boom, here's a screenplay. And on top of that, when we met Nichelle, you also pointed out Nicholas Meyer, and so we met Nicholas, and I had drinks with him on 2 nights running, and he's a lovely guy. And I didn't know anything about him, but I wish I had, because while I was talking with him, I didn't realize that he not only directed The Wrath of Khan and The Undiscovered Country, two fabulous Star Trek films, with great humor in them.
Fantastic humor.
Especially The Undiscovered Country. That's, Christopher Plummer's lines were just terrific. But he also co-wrote with Leonard Nimoy The Voyage Home.
Yeah.
Now, if I had known that, I have, because I said I had a script, and he said, no, I haven't got any. But if I had known that, I could have talked him in to having a look at the script, because I want him to direct the movie. So, you know, there are lots of, once we get this thing going, the universe is open to us, really.
Yeah. Well, to quote Commander Spock, there are always possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, things will happen that we can't anticipate. You know, there'll be wonderful opportunities that will open up.
Project Enterprise isn't going to go where unless it has fan awareness, and you're just about to set off on a campaign to raise fan awareness, and it's the fans who are really going to make it happen. At least they're going to contribute a considerable part to making it happen. What are your plans for the immediate future to raise awareness for Project Enterprise?
Well, I've, as a result of some limited funds that we've raised through fan contributions on our Indiegogo campaign, which is still running, I've hired a top PR woman in LA who's actually Al Jolson's great niece, wow. Nadine Jolson, and she's terrific. And Nadine also was good friends with Majel Roddenberry.
Wow.
Yeah. And she loves Star Trek, and so she wants to do this in the worst way. And so she's really put her heart and soul into it. And so we're structuring a campaign. In fact, I'm going over to see her in a few days. And I've put some videos together, and she's putting together a whole publicity campaign that will burst forth in the coming months.
And to enhance that, you began a fundraiser on Indiegogo, I believe?
Yeah, well, we started out with Kickstarter, but that was a mistake for us, and went over to Indiegogo, and that worked. And as a result of the Indiegogo campaign, we raised $17,000 so far, $15,000 of which was available after all the fees and everything. And it wasn't as much as I need. I really needed about $40,000 to continue the PR campaign as long as I need to really get the word out there. But still, spending that amount wisely and kicking in my own money, I managed to, you know, hire Nadine, and we're moving ahead. And I think probably, where are we now when we're recording this? We're mid-April. And when will this go out?
Oh, we'll go out in April.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would think by the summer, or mid-summer, the word will be out big time.
Well, the recreation of the Enterprise is a very important project. At conventions that I've been to, it's fascinating to see props and uniforms and other, you know, actors and whatever, but the one thing that's always missing is actually the Enterprise.
Absolutely.
You know, and I can't understand this. I would be personally excited if I could maybe not touch it, but at least get up close.
No, you're not going to be able to touch it.
But, you know, I mean, get up close and personal with the physical starship that thrilled us in all the six movies, you know, from the motion picture to the Undiscovered Country. It would be just wonderful to see the studio model, you know, in situ.
And I'll be there to talk about it and answer questions.
Yeah.
Take pictures and, you know, all the rest for the fans.
Yeah. But it's really a fan-driven project. You're expecting fans to contribute anything from $10 all the way up to a couple of $1,000.
$5,000.
$5,000?
Yeah, we've had one person bought the $5,000 package.
The $5,000 package is interesting because when what you're getting for the $5,000, I believe, is access at the top tier for life to a convention anywhere the Enterprise is on display. Is this correct?
That's right, yeah. You get you get a card. Well, even the $2,000 premium gets that. What the $5,000 premium gets you is to visit us for a day with your family at the shop and get your hands on the Enterprise, you know, to actually help do something on it. And you can pick a day, and hopefully a day where a famous actor will drop in to see, like maybe Tom Cruise or somebody like that, you know, Tom Hanks, because he's a real fan. And we'll try and arrange that, and then we'll take you to dinner. And then you get tons of premiums that you have to go on the website to see what we offer.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's projectenterprise.space.
Well, actually, I was just going to ask you that. Where can people find out more about Project Enterprise?
Projectenterprise.space. I'll say it one more time.
Really?
Projectenterprise.space.
Yeah. So listen up, people.
But we need your help.
Yeah. And where can people find Paul Olson to visit your work or contact you directly?
Well, I've got a website with the work I've done, and that's olsenart.com, olsenart.com.
So if anybody wants to contact you directly to offer assistance or offer you finance or offer you ideas, they can find you at olsenart.com.
Just write to me at paul@projectenterprise.space. Then I know it's coming from somebody to do with Star Trek.
Listen, thanks, Paul, for talking with us at Continuing Mission. It's been a tremendous honor to talk with you. Your work on Enterprise will live forever. And as you move forward with Project Enterprise, we at Trek FM sincerely hope that the next generation of Star Trek fans will appreciate your work as much as we do. So live long and prosper.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, as you probably gathered from that interview, I have known Paul Olson for quite a while. Now, if you're interested in supporting Project Enterprise, you can find all the details Paul was referring to on projectenterprise.space. That's projectenterprise.space. Why not take a look at his website? And if you truly would like to see the Starship Enterprise built by the same team that built the original model for Star Trek the Motion Picture, then have a read through the website and see how you can support this wonderful adventure. Now, Continuing Mission isn't the only podcast coming out of Space Dock here at Trek FM. Here's what you might have missed on other shows across our network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The ultimate fantasy was being called the ultimate fiasco, the ultimate fallacy, the ultimate F-up. And one girl on Sunday afternoon, she tells a story. They were walking to dinner, and she says, "Oh my God, you guys." They were talking some of these, you know, snarky names. She goes, no, you guys, listen. We've just survived the Con of Wrath." And they all, like, died laughing.
Warp 5.
At that time, you know, PTSD was not even a diagnosis. We had, for generations, had different terms to describe issues with soldiers' heart, you know, combat fatigue, shell shock.
Melodic Treks.
I have a big love in my heart. You know, like, my top three episodes are Where No Man's Gone Before, Believe It or Not, The Alternative Factor, and The Lights of Zatar.
I just almost passed out.
Meta Treks.
For me, just as soon as Quark goes under the knife, kind of...
It is not essential Trek philosophy.
Something seriously goes wrong. Not for me, no.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So, why not check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond? You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure and hit the subscribe button. That helps us out with ranking, and it makes it a whole lot easier for other listeners to find us on iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, well, we've still got you covered. You can find all our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 files from our website, and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help all our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and milestone contribution levels there, along with all the great perks we have for you. Or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. And don't forget the Babel Conference, which you can find on Facebook. The Babel Conference is a closed group, but if you ask to join, we'll let you right in, and you can join all the hot topics we discuss on there. We also invite you to leave a rating or a review of Continuing Mission on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. I can always be found on the Babel Conference on Facebook. And on Twitter, you can find me at Shamrock165. We'd like to acknowledge the rest of the Trek FM team, without which this or any other podcast would not be possible. See Brian Jones, our founder and publisher of Trek FM. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. And Aaron Harvey, our highly accomplished art director. I'm Tony Robinson, and thank you for joining with us today on Continuing Mission. See you soon on the next mission.